Welcome to the Guide to Movies podcast. This is episode 163. We have been off for about 3.5 years. Sean, how the hell are you?
We're back, baby.
Don't call to come back or do. I don't know.
Might as well be.
Might as well
be. The Alden Ehrenreich of podcasts.
Oh my gosh. Justice for Solo. Things, life gets a little crazy. So we weren't able to record for the past couple weeks. But here we are. We're going to do a little bit of a catch up today and see what's going on in the world of entertainment. Not a lot of great news over the past couple of weeks coming out of Hollywood, but we do have some trailers to get to. But Sean, what have you been watching? Have you seen any of the new releases?
Well, I mean, there hasn't been many. I can't bring myself to go see Taylor Swift. I respect her. I respect the empire she's built. I cannot go to a movie myself as a 34-year-old man where there's just going to be a bunch of tweens dancing and maybe adult women as well dancing. And I just can't, I can't bring myself to be that strange. I already am weirded out when I see Pixar movies alone. So at this point, I haven't seen that one. I think the last one I saw in theaters was Exorcist the Believer, which did you see that one or
no?
No, it's not good.
No, I was saying this to people. I don't know that I actually saw the original Exorcist all the way through.
Oh, really?
It's one of those that I keep thinking back to. I'm like, I obviously know what it's about, and I know the big scenes, but I don't know that I've ever really seen it. So when it came time to see that, or I can't remember what screening was scheduled opposite it, and I was like, going to that one.
So we have a perfect opposite dichotomy with that, because I did not see Saw X kind of for the same reason. Like, I've seen the original Saw and then the Spiral, but I haven't really earned the Saw. Like, when you said, like, you know, there's these characters that come back, and I'm like, I don't know those characters. So like, there's certain things where I'm like, I don't feel like I've earned that. I have all of the Saws on my watch list, so it'll eventually happen. We're kind of in the same boat on both sides of that.
Isn't that the tale of two horror franchises right now, though? The Exorcist Believer came out and shit the bed to the point where reports are that they're considering not having David Gordon Green do the next two because it's supposed to be a trilogy. The next one's called Deceiver. Then you have Saw X on the other side of things, where this was the 10th Saw movie, and it is by far the best rated Saw movie out of, I think it's at 80% last I checked. Or last I read
the article. It's technically the only fresh one, which if people were to go back, I think people would root that first Saw movie fresh. I just don't think the world was ready for it. Like, I genuinely think even critics would see that. So I think, like, critics have grown up in a certain way since whenever that was. I think like 2002 or whatever. But
it's just wild to me that, like, this is it's 10 movies in. It is a 20-year-old franchise. And they were planning on this either being the cap of the franchise, like, all right, we're done. Or, like, if it did well, there are some strings that they put in there, some loose ends, I should say. And it did really well. And, you know, I was nervous going into it because I didn't want another, like, Saw 3D that was going to just shit the bed. But it's a really good character study of Jigsaw, and which goes back to all of the things I've always said about the series, is there's a really good I was going to say heartfelt story. It's not really heartfelt. There's a good moral story at the core of it that, of course, gets played out in torture porn, and some sequels have taken it in different directions. But, man, like, just Tobin Bell. My buddy Jeremy sent me this meme last night that was really funny, and it was a picture of Tobin Bell. It said, when you get hired to lay on the floor for 2 weeks for a movie and end up becoming a horror icon instead.
That is pretty brilliant. I mean, like, I've appreciated, like, these Saw movies turned gore porn, for better or for worse, into something, you know, into, like, the type of genre it was. And I think there's a lot of people that resented that first Saw movie for that. But there's just so much to that one that is, like, very different than just the torture porn, just the gore porn. And I think that, you know, I think finally we're appreciating that. And, with Exorcist the Believer, it did none of those things you just said. And the original Exorcist is a classic, not because, and granted, in the 70s, I think a few more people were scared of the devil. It's not just from the fear of the devil. It was because of how they filmed it. It was because of, like, how it was filmed. And, you know, RIP to Friedkin, who fortunately missed this. But I look at something like this movie, and I just think, like, oh, they just focused on, like, the kid had a weird face with scratched up faces, and then they talk occasionally in a deep voice. And there's so much more to those movies than that. And it's from the mechanics of the filmmaking. And just a quick just a quick idea here. Don't have your film start with the earthquake in Haiti and have that be the origin story of the devil. Just like at that very moment, that is how this movie fucking starts. Oh my God. I remember when they just like they marked it off like it's like Haiti 2010. I was like, oh no.
What the fuck?
And so then like it's just like wildly culturally insensitive. And I guess they try to make up with it at the end when they have instead of a priest coming in, but it's like an Avenger style of all different type of religions, like religious people coming in to try to take out the not one, but two possessed girls as if that ups the ante at all. And then the final moments, like I'm not going to spoil them, but they were just like they were meant to be this like emotional reach that just doesn't even like is not even not earned, but it's just random. And so It's just like they put this tragedy in there that just doesn't work. And I will say one of like, you know, like there is something I gave this a D. I was very close to an F, but I gave it a D because there's a couple of moments in the beginning where Leslie Odom's like going around that house and stuff. And he's just chilling in the house. And it's creepy. And David Gordon Green is doing creepy very well there. But then the rest of it is just crap from there. It's like all garbage. And I don't know where they said one's going to be Deceiver. And then the third one is going to be called Retriever where they possess a dog. I don't know. But none of this really, unfortunately, like, you know, is good anymore. And we've talked about the Halloween films. That first Halloween film that David Gordon Green did was like a shot in the arm, like really cool kind of stuff. And then from there, there's interesting stuff with those. Once again, he has like some interesting things, some cool kills, but nothing else there works. And this is a guy who has made Vice Principals and you know, some of Eastbound and Down, and then Righteous Gemstones, which are some of the finest TV comedies. And I like the idea of him exploring these dark corners, but I don't know why he's choosing to, like, you know, just piss off people with the, like, you know, redoing these legacy sequels to these classics. Because Ellen Burstyn just doesn't belong in here at all.
She's in it for like 5 minutes, I heard.
In it like 5 minutes, and she's a parent who witnessed an exorcism in the 70s and was horrified by it. So this time she's like, let me take a stab at it and let me try my own, and then like that doesn't go well. But like it's just like, let me try it. You know, the priest didn't do so hot, but let me try to actually exorcise someone. It's so like nonsensical, and I wanted to like I was expecting pretty low, unfortunately, but I did like want to like this. I want to like movies in general, but I wanted to like this, and it just wasn't scary, which is a bad problem for me.
The David Gordon Green thing is just surprising to me because while Halloween started out strong with that first film in 2018 or whatever it was, they did kind of shit the bed after that. And the second movie itself, as soon as they were chasing around the dude in the hospital and they're like, that's Michael. And he was like half the size of Michael. I'm like, you guys have lost, like, you've lost it. You've lost credibility here.
And they're trying to do this like mob justice thing. And like, they're trying to say stuff, but it's evil just dies not tonight. It just does not even come across at all.
Yeah, so the fact that he was brought on for this in and of itself was surprising to me, but it doesn't surprise me that it shit the bed a little bit. Which, well, actually, I will say that like the week prior to it coming out, one of the trailers I saw, or maybe it was a week even before that, when I was on vacation, I was sitting with my dad, we were watching TV, and the trailer came on, and I'm like, oh, that actually doesn't look half bad, but I'm assuming that what they showed was probably like the best parts of the movie.
He's a good filmmaker, and David Gordon Green is really good at directing. And just, I think they'd just take a few passes at a script, or just put the script into the fire, like, because that was the problem there. I think he's got some like potential there, like to make something creepy and like make me a little bit, like, a couple of moments where I get some goosebumps. But other than that, it does not work.
He did Pineapple Express back in the day.
He's known for his comedy, and his comedy is just like very strong. And I always admire someone going from comedy to horror, especially, like, you know, let's face it. There's been some solid successes there. Jordan Peele, thank you. And so I don't know. I wish that this could be a better jump. I maybe just some different ideas, like, or some fresh ideas. I don't know what could be a little bit better here, but something has to be changed here.
He's also tied to the Hellraiser TV series, which is interesting. He's like sticking with horror there and another reboot in that sense.
Did that come out, or is that coming out?
It's in production.
Because there was a Hellraiser movie that just came out, right? And that was like, I'd never seen a Hellraiser movie in my life, but I've heard that was actually pretty good.
The one that went to Hulu. Yeah, it was actually pretty solid.
So something there, I guess. But
it's just, it's kind of interesting because that's what we're seeing with these horror properties. Most recently, the Miramax acquiring the Friday the Halloween. Acquiring the Halloween rights, and so that will be going to who knows. But that's going to be kind of interesting to see how they play with that. And then there's something tied, and I can't find a clear answer on this, but there is something tied to the film rights as well for them. So it's like they have the TV rights, but then I don't know if down the road they have the ability to loop into cinematic, probably once the current rights expire with Universal. I don't really know what, how that's all working. But yeah, it's kind of wild to see horror is once again the thing that everyone's playing in.
And it's just like the Halloween is the same problem that The Exorcist has. Like, you know, people are just like, the reason those are good is because of good filmmakers that covered very like banal topics. Like one of them is about the devil. The other one's about a serial killer. That like, there's not a like a fruitful amount of topic in there. And yes, those things have both exploded into legendary like properties in their own right from various avenues. But I don't know, man. I mean, it's kind of like a very thin premise to begin with. And that premise is only brought across the line because Carpenter and Friedkin are just like absolute bosses. Like,
it's also, though, you kind of alluded to this earlier. We live in a world now where it's not the 70s. It's not, you know, the height of religious zealotism. Is that the right word to say? That, you know, we're kind of religion is still very prominent in this world, and all the issues in this world are caused by religion. Anyway, but no, we live in a world where like things don't scare us as much anymore because the world, we've seen such shit in our lifetimes. And I just wonder, you know, I think that's why Talk to Me is something that was really well received. You look at things like even like Saul X being well received, the way they told that story, and it still dives into the moral questions there, and has to do with, you know, basically grifters and people pulling one over on someone else and playing with others' lives in order to better their own. But then even like, let's talk about something like No One Will Save You that went to Hulu. Yeah. Hulu 2 years in a row releasing movies that would have done well in theaters. isn't that nuts? but like No One Will Save You takes an alien concept and kind of fuses together like a Home Alone and a Quiet Place in one, in a way, and has fun with it. And I think, like, you know, there's ways to tell these stories that aren't always going back to the same well. The problem you have with Friday the 13th, the problem you have with Halloween, the problem you have with any of these, The Exorcist as well, is, and I guess I would argue Friday the 13th and Halloween first. You look at like what Rob Zombie did with Halloween. The first Halloween movie from Rob Zombie, solid. The second one, as soon as Michael Myers opened his mouth, when the mask came off and he opened his mouth, that was it. And the people that subscribe to the lore of Halloween and Friday the 13th, if you deviate too much, you're going to lose them. And I think that's the balance that has never been struck appropriately when it comes to reimagining these properties. And I don't know that it can be done in a way that both pleases those who have stuck with the series through all of the crazy sequels, and those today who, you know, studios want to get a stranglehold on so they can continue to build new fan bases. I don't know how you do that.
Well, and they always say these are these safe financial bets. Like, people could say, like, could David Gordon Green actually, like, pitch a original idea for a horror film? And I would argue that he has enough goodwill and enough good stuff. Like, he probably could. And instead, he wants to reimagine stuff. But these are the safer bets. These are the easier things to pitch, where it's like, you know, oh, another Exorcist sequel. Because, you know, you can throw that Exorcist, like, you could throw the Halloween or the Exorcist score into the trailer. And that'll perk up some ears. And while, like, you know, a lot of people will be like, ugh, another sequel, those will still be the ones that people go and flock to the theater for. And there's no way to, like, think about anything else. But then Talk to Me. But then, you know, something like Talk to Me, which, you know, was a risk. Like, they were proud, like, you know, A24 loves to take risks anyway. But you know what? They were sweating. And you know what? A24, they're getting a little bit, they're feeling a little bit rough on the risks that they've been taking. And they're starting to go into the IP stuff, which I've read the actual articles on that, and boy, are mountains being made out of molehills there.
Oh yeah,
everyone's death of A24 completely. I'm like, no, they're gonna put some stuff in there that'll keep the lights on, and then they'll still make our great shit. Like, relax.
Like Dix the Musical.
Like, it's just like, that's not even playing near my theater, by the way.
They pushed it a little bit. So like the select theaters was October 6th. And then it kept getting moved around. Taylor Swift pushed it a little again because yeah. Dick's the Musical versus Taylor Swift.
The Sewer Boys and Taylor Swift are going to be a big
the fucking Sewer Boys. I wanted to love that movie, by the way. I laughed consistently.
Yeah, and I heard it's a solid joke machine, but
it's a solid joke machine, but it's just stupid as fuck. And it's not like good stupid, it's bad stupid. Except Megan Mullally and Nathan Lane are hilarious together.
Hearing them do interviews in this, because they're allowed to do interviews because it's A24, is an absolute blast. Like Nathan Lane just absorbs ridiculous movies between this and Ari Aster.
Beau is Afraid.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm just diving into the weirdness.
There's outtakes at the end, and there's like scenes with him in the Sewer Boys, and he's just laughing uncontrollably. And he says something like, oh, here's the title of my next memoir, or something like that. Like, he's fully aware of how ridiculous this movie is.
I love that.
But yeah, it's an interesting one. But another example of A24 just going crazy with... And hey, it had one of the best specialty box offices. So who am I?
I mean, there you go.
I don't get it. We also didn't talk about the creator, I don't believe.
No, we didn't. I was surprised because we fell about the same on that one.
We did.
Interesting. Because I was desperate to love this movie. Me too. I mean, and we'll talk about this, but you know, in a completely original non-IP type of you know, action sci-fi movie, I was like, I need to love this. I desperately need to love this. And I went in there and I'm like, the visuals are great. Like, I want this to win visual effects. Like, I don't want it to be like a Marvel movie to win visual effects. I want this to win visual effects. But them bragging about how, you know, it's not an IP movie at all, or it's not based on anything. And I just think, well, you know, it's still also not good. And I've seen so much of this in IP movies or in other action movies. So there's just so much familiar and there's just so much derivative that it ended up being boring by the end. And there was just, and I am someone that happily accepts plot holes. I will excuse away plot hole after plot hole happily, because I'm like, hey, I want to feel a certain way about this movie, so you leave me alone with your logic. But there were some plot holes in this that were just straight up very rough and just didn't even like make a cohesive bit of sense, that I eventually gave this a C, I think, because it is so visually freaking good. Like, it is just like top tier visuals. Like, you know, see it in a theater, like, is one of the as one of them said, see it on the biggest screen imaginable. I agree with that, but in the end of this, I was pretty fairly disappointed.
I would agree with you, and for all those reasons. I also am not, I'm continuing to not be a fan of John David Washington.
This was interesting, because this was the first film where all of a sudden everybody did not like John David Washington, and I thought we all liked him. I've been to the meetings, and because it was like, I loved him in Tenet, and I don't know what was in Tenet at all, but I liked him in it. Like, I thought he was pretty charming. I thought he was a good action lead, but and I liked him in Ballers and stuff, but in this, his, like, I almost don't want to lay the problem to his feet, because my God, was his character given just not a stitch of a thing. So, like, I don't think anyone could have made this look good. But I kind of interrupted you there. Go ahead.
No, you're good. I just didn't really care for him. But I also was frustrated with the fact that they continue to say that this isn't based on anything. And it really is. So there's a comic series that was published in 2015 called Descender. And Descender, the story is a young android trying to survive endless bounty hunters in a universe that has outlawed all robotics and artificial intelligence. So a little loftier. But what I will show you is the poster for the creator and then the cover of the Descender Volume 1.
Yeah. You have a Twitter thread on this too, which when I read that, I was like, wow, this is pretty unassailable. Now, this has not been made into a film, but yeah, yikes.
Well, the rights to it were purchased by Sony. No, yeah, Sony has the film rights, and a subsidiary of NBC Universal has the TV rights as of 2020.
And has this been like, has there been any news of this at all?
I don't understand why nobody's talking about this. Like, if you look at the
quite identical, I mean,
it's the same image.
Has a lot of like, you know, this has so much of like AI, the movie from which, but so already it's just like the designs are there. And so I could happily almost excuse this as a great minds. The parallel thinkers could occur. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I not even with that stuff, the overt like similarities that you see there. I just thought I was like, I've seen this before in like just numerous action movies. We have an extremely deadly weapon. That deadly weapon is a young child. Logan, call for your suing money. Like, I mean, I don't. There's just so much where I'm like, wow, this is just so much that I've seen in other shit. And guess what? Logan's IP. Logan did it better. Yeah. So I get it that a lot of stuff is Marvel and is, and I get that it's getting repetitive and it's getting annoying. And, you know, when my parents go see movies with me and they're just like, every single trailer is robots fighting. And they just turn to me like, what the fuck is going on? I totally get that we can like get pissed about that stuff. And I'll happily like be on the line and get pissed with you as well. But like, you know, then this happens where, you know, we go so far as to say constantly like, you know, it's original thing. It's original thing. It's original thing. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, not that original. And but also, oh, the robots turn out to feel and the robots turn out to be good. And like, I mean, right now, that's not the best move. I mean, that's also a move that we've seen in every other robot movie where, you know, Johnny Five is alive and come with me if you want to live. We've seen it in so many different things where the robots turn out to be good, even when the robots are the enemy. And so, I mean, I guess the one thing I liked about this is they made like a fog of war a little bit complicated. Like, you know, when there a couple of things, but like as a whole, I was just pretty disappointed throughout, unfortunately.
The scene where the robots are armed individually and running across the bridge to detonate was fantastic.
That was great. That. The bridge scene was really good. And like you get Allison Janney, who I just imagine that this was taken from someone else's take, but Allison Janney is just like this is her sequel to The West Wing. And this is just her as grown up CJ Craig. Cause she, like, actors can be in different roles, but I kind of love this as the sequel to CJ Craig.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, this is unfortunately a little bit of a bummer for me. And you know, once again, I am going to be rooting for this wholeheartedly to get visual effects. Really want it to. I think it deserves it beyond reasonable doubt, but nothing else.
Allison Janney also reminded me of Sigourney Weaver in the Avatar movies. Like that was kind of how her role was for me.
I was going to say that general in the Avatar movies that I can't remember now, but
yeah, but a little bit more human here. Like,
yeah,
well, she was likable.
It's not a tough call with the Avatar character.
It's true. We're talking a lot about IP, and you know, we are in this weird time where SAG-AFTRA is still on strike, though the writer's strike is over. So we're starting to see some things, you know, some news coming out about the developments behind the scenes with different movies. But the fall landscape for the remainder of the fall, I should say, in cinemas does look a little, not bleak, but, you know, things have moved and it's just weird. We don't know if this strike's going to end. Most recently, they met on Wednesday and apparently the top four brass were there again, the Gang of Four, and they walked away from the bargaining table. And said they wouldn't bargain anymore because they wouldn't. They're claiming that they put out basically the same agreement that they did with the writers. But then SAG-AFTRA is coming out and being like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! You're misrepresenting all this." So SAG-AFTRA saying we're ready to go back to the table whenever you are, but the studios are playing hardball right now.
Yeah, this fascinates me. I mean, it fascinates me because I figured, you know, after the WGA reached their terms, and it sounded like, you know, the writers did win the strike. I mean, they had to give a few concessions, but for the most part, the writers did win the strike because it's just what was supposed to happen. And then all of a sudden, like, I mean, the SAG-AFTRA is just such an important branch of film. I mean, like WGA, like you could replace everything with AI. The movies would suck. Don't get me wrong, but like they could almost be replaced. It's going to be impossible at this point to replace with actors now. Yeah. It's such a stunning thing to me that like, they have a lot more leverage, it feels like, and for some reason they're holding off on this, which is just very strange. It's baffling to me, this whole thing.
Will the Wonka movie suffer because Timothy Chalamet and Hugh Grant and Olivia Colman can't be out there promoting it?
I went to see Dune in theaters when it was a day and date release because Timothy Chalamet told me on TikTok to see it in theaters. I don't know if you remember this TikTok. It happened to me.
I do, actually.
You'll see it in theaters. Theaters! And I remember when I saw it, I was like, Oh, Timmy. Yeah, dude, I'll see it in theaters. Like, I don't know what, like, so right then and there, that's the problem right there. But, I mean, there's a million ways the Wonka movie could suffer. But yeah. Boy, oh boy. I mean, they need their promotions right now. It's going to be just really interesting. You know, actors not promoting stuff is kind of been sort of detrimental for film. I didn't think it would be that big of a deal, but it is. It just is. I mean, you know, poor Nolan did his best when he had to promote Oppenheimer and he was the only guy there. And he did all those stupid interview, like, you know, like, not Jimmy Fallon stuff, but like online bullshit where he finished Google searches and went through lightning round of questions. And I got to give it to him. You could tell he was dying inside, but he was playing the part pretty well, but goddamn, he was miserable. It's like, and then it's just already, I'm like seeing Ridley Scott is now taking interviews for Napoleon, and I'm like, god, fuck.
Oh my god.
Buddy, I love your films, but just like, I don't know, have a publicist or something.
we just watched the trailer for Wonka, the second trailer before we jumped on here, and I think we both agreed that like the movie is what it is, but the second trailer was better than the first. It gives you more, I think there's more to like in this one, and I'm surprised they didn't release it as the first one. But what's interesting to me is they're still not showcasing the musical side of this.
That is weird that a second trailer doesn't even do that. And this could be that there are only like a couple of songs. And so it's just, you know, they're burying the lead and they don't want to like really mess with revealing the songs. But it's strange that these songs are not shown at all. I mean, even like the only thing I can think of is when Sweeney Todd did that, where pretty much the trailers like did not have the music in it at all, except for one brief moment. I remember I went to see Sweeney Todd with a buddy and he was just like, I had no idea this was a musical. and it was because Johnny Depp, not a great singer. And yeah. So they just said, okay, we'll just, you know, we'll cover that up and we'll try to do what we can with that later. And I mean, with this one, I don't know what Timothée Chalamet is as a singer. I imagine he's going to be doing a lot of talk singing, and that's fine. That's what, you know, the stars do. It's okay. But yeah, this was a better trailer. And once again, my confidence is fully in Paul King. I mean, no one thought Paddington was going to be the masterpiece that it was. And then both of those turn out to be exceptional. So it's like, I'll have faith in him there, but pretty much that's where my faith ends, is in those credits when I see screenplay and directing by Paul King. I'm like, okay, I've got you there, buddy. I'm literally there for you, but I mean, nothing else in this is attracting me. And so they should be putting, just like they most recently with Flora and Son, they didn't put Sing Street everywhere on the poster because, yeah, you know, everyone loves that movie. They should have done that with this, where it's just like Paddington, like Paddington, from the makers of Paddington, should go over the title. Because I'm telling you, like, that's like, those are movies that are beloved. And so I think I saw a little bit more of that Paddington magic here.
Yeah, I agree.
It still just looks like it's something where, you know, not to be a purist, but, you know, the original had actual scenery and, you know, just like live action production design. And this is just going to be like CGI digital fest to death. And, you know, okay, that's what the world is. Fine. But I don't know. There's just parts of it that doesn't look good. And Chalamet just does not have that weird whimsy of a Wonka, which we all thought he would. And he was like the internet top casting choice. But he doesn't really have... He doesn't have that. I wish he would. I wish he did, but
he's a great actor, but even like his 100 is still muted. And
yeah,
that doesn't not necessarily work for this. I mean, I guess I can kind of see it when compared to like Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
In like, I'm arguing with myself now in my head, because Gene Wilder did have like a muted performance for most of it. But in those scenes where he had to go big, he went big. And I'm wondering if we're going to see that again.
Like, and Gene Wilder is just like naturally someone who's goofy. Like when he's muted, I'm like, oh, he's weird. Like, so like, even like when he was just like, when he was just like simply talking about the thing, there was something weird happening there. And so I don't know, like, so like, and Chalamet has just been like kind of categorized as weird dude, like kind of like quirky dude and stuff like that. But I don't know. He's more of like the normal now, because the world is just so quirky that, like, and thank God it is. Like, thank God we're in a situation where Chalamet shows up in like a dress at one of the award shows, and it kind of just works. We're all just like, yeah, no, sure. Like, that works for me. And so I don't, it's tough to put Chalamet in a box, which does make this a good casting. But now that I've been seeing it, he seems to be a bit more boxed in throughout it, and I don't know what the deal is there. He's trying to do the whimsy and it just does not convey in the same way.
Do you think we're going to get a young Uncle Joe in this movie somehow? I want to know how he turned into a freeloading fuck.
I still hope we, instead of getting a young Uncle Joe, it's just Uncle Joe's the same age, and he was just old as fuck from the beginning. Kind of like Mr. Potter, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Kind of like Mr. Potter and It's a Wonderful Life, where, like, even when George was a boy, very different things. Oh, God.
The other trailer we watched together was The Iron Claw, and this is about the Von Erich wrestling family. Jeremy Allen White, Zach Efron. I'm very intrigued by this, especially like growing up as a diehard wrestling fan, but also just seeing these two in a film together, I think, is intriguing to me. There was a funny comment at the bottom. The top comment from the YouTube video when we were watching the trailer was like, I just want Jeremy Allen White to be cast with a non-problematic family for once.
John Bernthal shows up halfway through this. I'm running. You just can't have that. I mean,
This is again an A24 film. And I don't remember who's directing this one.
It's a Sean Durkin, who like is a very mysterious director who's like done like Marthy May, Macy May Marlene and stuff. This guy is like a fascinating director. He does not work that often. And so that for that reason alone, I'm very interested in this. Harris Dickinson is also in this from Bond Speculation and also Triangle of Sadness.
And I do want to throw in too, Maura Tierney and Lily James are in this as well. I don't want to leave them out of this.
And then, of course, I recognized him and didn't know it for sure, but I screamed it at the end. Holt McCallany, who, my God, dude, like this guy has just been like right now. Most of you heard that name and you're like, huh? Google the dude. You've seen him in 10 million things. He is like just the character's actor. And he seems like he's playing a very critical role. Now, if I want to just be like gross and talk about like award show shit, I'm like, push this next year, man. Push this next year, because right now I don't see this warming into any of the categories where this could like rock some surprise categories if they push it a little bit, but they're not going to. It's going to be a December 22nd, which is, you know, hey, who knows, momentum could shift. If I'm talking on purely awards, I'd love to see, like, I don't know, anything just surprising happen here, but
we're not going to get into that today because I want to get into it with you about a particular person who is being considered the top of the category right now. Who am I talking about?
You're talking about De Niro?
No, he's fantastic in Killers.
You liked him. You're just talking about Killers of the Flower Moon in general.
I am. I'm talking about Gladstone.
Oh, well, okay, so this is gonna be the category fraud discussion.
Well, kind of, but she's, I'll just say this, she's very, very good in the movie. She's very, very good. But when you get to the third act, and I had you in the back of my mind because what movie were we talking about recently? Where was it you that said they had the third act, like Oscar speech or something?
Yeah.
And she,
I forget which thing it was, but
there was nothing. It was Emily Blunt. That's who you were talking about.
In Oppenheimer, she has that big moment. Yeah.
Yep. Not with this though. Like there, it's just, it never quite came together. And what she's fantastic with what she was given. And this is not a knock on her performance at all. She deserved more, and I would expect more of that character in order for her to be in the conversation like she is. So I think
I heard the knock is the character is portrayal. Like not portrayals like that. The character is in, like, given, written into the movie is tough.
One note, just very rough.
Okay. Yeah. I was bummed when I saw your reaction.
I was so nervous to put that reaction out there. I was like, oh my God, am I wrong? Did something go? And then I had a couple people message me that said, like, oh, no, I thought the same thing when I saw it a couple weeks ago at this festival, blah, blah. I'm like, thank God.
This is interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But I've got it. It's my Thursday movie.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. That's going to be an interesting
I'm worried my bias is going to show. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm going to just apologize in advance. I have such a hard-on for Scorsese. I'm worried my bias is going to show bad. I'll try not to. I'm gonna go in there as blank-headed as I can. But... God damn it.
There's one thing in this movie that you're either going to like fucking eat up or you're going to hate. And
you,
I can't,
know I'm going to eat it up. I'm going to feast upon it, baby.
I don't know. I can't figure it out. I really can't figure it out. What did you give Asteroid City?
Oh, I gave it a C. Yeah, okay. That was a weird one. Yeah. Okay. I'm also not a James Gray loyalist as much as I am a Scorsese loyalist. But okay. All right. Well,
I'll just leave that one out there.
Don't say anything else. I don't want to hear anything else.
All right. I'm sorry. This is why we don't talk about this shit when I see it right away. Let's one other thing I want to talk about today, because I know you shared it, and we were talking about this a little bit, I think through LOLs, quite honestly. I think that was our conversation about this. But Marvel's Blade movie is once again being rewritten, apparently. But well, let's talk
Yeah, there's a lot here, because there's that one. Daredevil Reborn is also just completely been scrapped. And
Because apparently it went too much into a legal procedural. And I don't understand how they get as far as they do. Like, they were seven episodes in, apparently, and they're like, nope, this isn't working. I'm like, you fucking approved the script. I don't get it.
Well, I think I don't know how, but writer's strike might have something to do with it, where like maybe it was written before and then they couldn't do any business whatsoever. And then I agree with you, but like I think some like the creator of the writer's strike probably caused this huge infraction, I think. Or they're just firing writers because they're monsters.
So that point with TV, with Daredevil and with the other stuff that's going on in television, is that they're apparently focusing on like retooling how they do TV and having showrunners and having a little bit more focus on the how the business is run everywhere else, and not just running with this and treating it like, you know, an 8-episode movie or something like that. Like, they're gonna, I think you're gonna see a little bit more of the TV genealogy in their projects moving forward. It also sounds like from some of the reports that they want to focus on developing the individual characters and not necessarily to then push them to larger projects.
Bolstering.
Nailed it. But like, for instance, like Echo, we probably won't see Echo in other shit, but they're focusing on her as a character there. That's also one that was rumored to have been completely rewritten and reshot. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of wild to me. The latest report with Marvel, and we'll get back to Blade in a second, but the latest report from Marvel that I saw yesterday, and I think some of this is coming out of that new MCU, the Reign of Whatever book that came out. But I don't know if this is directly from there. Do not eat the blanket.
Sorry.
My dog is crazy. Calvin, do not eat the blanket. But the latest is that they were, the producers and all at Marvel, the brass, were really shocked at the reception of Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, because they thought they had a hit on
that. I heard that too. Other stuff, they're like, hey, you know, Eternals was kind of a mess, the bad reception there and stuff like that. We didn't really love that one. But like, Quantumania and the Wasp shook them to their core, like when that got a bad reception from everybody, which, I mean, I always worry about when they listen to fans, because then we get Rise of Skywalker. And so, granted, Last Jedi was better than Quantumania. But I mean, there's always a part of me that says, like, this is always horrible news to hear. This is always like disarray kind of actions to hear. And I'm like, oh, boy, that's not good. But also, I think, well, you know what? I mean, if they're retooling everything, maybe that could end up meaning that it was really bad and they're going to try it out again in this new, better way. So maybe the Blade movie is gonna now be good somehow with Mahershala Ali, who would just be like, God, that's such a cool casting. I don't want them to waste this. And now you on one hand, you could be worried about it, and that makes sense to be worried about it. On the other hand, I'm like, hey, they're starting from the scratch on the drawing board, and so maybe that means they're gonna be making a good movie for us. I don't know though. Like, I mean, it's never good news when you hear this.
No. And, you know, it's interesting because if you remember back a couple years ago, I had interviewed Bassam Tariq when he did, Mogul Mowgli. And he was just being brought on to, or he had signed on to do Blade. And at that point, he was talking about like pre-development and how they were in they were like studying different martial arts and stuff like that to try to bring a new focus here. He's since left, and now this is a complete rumor online, so I don't know like what to make of it. But basically, they're saying that one of the reasons he left was that the script was so bad, which wouldn't surprise me given that the rumors of rewrites. This is now like the second or third rewrite.
Kind of like a confirmation of that rumor now.
Yeah. And not only was it a ripoff from a previous movie from another studio, but it was also laughably woke in a particularly distasteful way. And this is actually, I'd seen this multiple times that they were saying it was basically the Underworld movie. Which is just interesting because it's funny. Like, when I think about vampire movies, I don't know I don't have the creativity to think of a different way that they could go present something like Blade that doesn't look like the original Blade or doesn't look like Underworld or anything like that. But yeah, this is a mess. This is a fucking mess.
It's bad. It's not great. And you know, like, yeah, like when a director leaves for creative differences, you know that like there's something bad there. And yeah, you know, like a lot of films have had like development hells and turn out great. So who knows? This could work out. But I mean, I've already said, I've been on record for saying Daredevil Reborn is going to be a nightmare, but only because like the loyalists that love that three season Netflix series are going to be like, it's not the exact same, and they're going to just despise it in every
absolutely way.
And so it's going to get like, even if it's like fine, it's going to just be like absolutely obliterated. And so, I mean, because already Daredevil showed up in She-Hulk, and that's one that like the internet loves. So like, I don't know where else.
Which is funny that we're talking about that with how the fans of the Netflix series will respond to the Marvel one, because that kind of is full circle to where our conversation started today with Halloween and Friday the 13th and the original fan bases.
Well, and then, you know, all of this is culminating into the Marvels, which is having like... What was the, they had like a preview box office survey that's like fairly reliable and says it's going to be like one of the worst like Marvel movies. And of course people
are financially
financially like, and you know, that alone is just going to be, people are going to say, well, that's because it's women. And so people are just going to cling to that very quickly. And no, it's because Marvel hasn't really hit something good in a very long time. And we're getting a little bit sick of it. And you know, by the way, have you watched, we're going cash here. You started Loki season two?
I watched the first episode. I haven't watched the second episode yet.
How you feeling?
I'm, you know what? I never thought I would get here. I am burnt out.
Oh no, buddy. We can't have both of us there.
I'm very burnt out with Marvel. And I was going to bring, look, let's take this in an interesting direction.
Let's do it.
When I couldn't sleep the other night, my mind, of course, went to thinking about the structure of Marvel Studios.
I just love that you have more of a worry than probably Feige does.
I must have read a tweet or something that got me thinking. But it's I think this Ant-Man thing really got me, because there was such a disconnect between the reception of the movie and what they thought people were going to think of it. And it makes me wonder if now, you know, Feige's been the architect of everything. And we're 12 years in to whatever.
About 12, yeah.
About 12. Is it time for someone else to take the reins?
I
don't know what that would do, because I think like part of it is they've run the course with a lot of their characters, the main characters that really brought people in. And I'm thinking specifically about Iron Man and Captain America as the two main ones. But like, what now?
This is such a similar conversation we're having in Boston of like, is it time for Belichick and Kraft to part ways?
I like it, though.
I think it's actually extremely similar, because it's like insane amount of success. Like, Belichick's still a brilliant coach and no one's going to question that. Yeah. And he'll probably go somewhere else and win a Super Bowl in that place. Like, I think that's just going to happen next year because he's a brilliant coach. But
your
I just
team's
think
it's in a different
point,
place, though.
They're just like, yeah, like Tom Brady like grabbed the Infinity Stones and blew himself up. And so, what I just thought of it, I was like, because I had that sting when you said it's a time for Feige to move on. And I had that sting for a moment because I'm like, well, no, because he's been the god of Marvel. But then it's like, well, maybe actually it's time for, you know, someone. I mean, they're trying to do this thing where they're washing the board and making a new Avengers. And it's like, I don't think you should be doing that, because then they list the new Avengers and it's like, this is just dog shit, guys. I mean, it's just not a good setup at all.
It's
and
not so something that you can ground the entire universe in moving forward.
And this is just like with 2017 Justice League, where they're just like, let's like introduce the characters all within the fucking movie, and that's fine. It's like, no, they like Marvel worked really hard to make a movie for each one of these goddamn characters, and then they finally got them together, and that was where the magic lay. And so, like, and that's, yeah, so, oh, God. Like, I do think about it where, like, you know, okay, going back to it, though. There's a reason I love Loki so much, is because like I feel like it's above the rest of the Marvel bullshit, where it's like, well, there's like characters that are in there and they're kind of like flirting with the big bad of Jonathan Majors, which is interesting. We won't get into, but and they're flirting with that big bad villain. Like, it's almost like that is just like kind of untouchable to the connections to the rest of the Marvel universe, where it's like, you know, we're the main character that is technically dead. And so we're dealing with just like this separate universe. We're in this world where time doesn't exist. And so like they can kind of do whatever they want. And I can just enjoy myself with just like the weirdness of Loki without having to like hurt my head over like, oh, how's this going to affect the next thing? And this thing. And like, instead I'm not doing that with this. And I'm just like enjoying the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. I'm with you in the sense that I would appreciate a little less of the interconnectedness. And I think that's what some of the, I would argue that some of these phase four movies were doing that. They were setting up larger things down the road, but it wasn't necessarily like, I'm always going back to Eternals. It wasn't like, you know, what's their interaction going to be with the next big bad or whatever. It was more so this giant thing's going to be in.
It's going to be like on one screen grab of She-Hulk and that's it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so we're doing freestyle and we didn't get a chance to talk about this either. This may close it out for us, but how'd you think of the end of Ahsoka, buddy?
I will say this. I loved it.
Oh, that is a show that peaked in the middle so goddamn well and just left everything hanging, and I get there's a season two, but like
I don't feel like it left it hanging, and I feel like this goes back to a conversation we had months ago about like people forget what episodic television is. Yeah. and you're right, like it's, I think the problem is that we're and I'm guilty of this, we are led to, or we're made to want big reveals and big surprises in everything. And we always think that those, you know, in an 8-episode series, 7 is going to lead to the big 8, which is going to be phenomenal. And it was really good storytelling. But like, you're right. When it comes to like what everyone's talking about with the series, that was episode 4. Yeah. And that's, which I think is fine. I think out of all the Star Wars properties, it's really fascinating just thinking back to like my rankings of them. Let's talk TV shows, right? Mandalorian is wonderful. I like the first season of Mandalorian a lot. Andor's great because it's for me, because it's very different. I think Ahsoka is my favorite.
I think Andor is my favorite, but it's almost unfair because Andor is just like not so even different. Like Star Wars. It's like, I really did love Ahsoka. I think that the problem is like the main conflict was the choice that Sabine made, and they really brushed that. Where Ahsoka's like, "Well, Anakin stood by me, so I'll stand by you." And I was like, "Bro, fucking what? Like, you guys were like, are you kidding me here? Like, I don't know how you end a conflict like that, but." It was one where I still think that this was what Star Wars should be, even more than Andor. So that, my argument there is like, you know, from a Star Wars perspective, this had the space wizards and laser swords, and you're supposed to have the space wizards and laser swords. And this had that very in spades, like in such a great way. But then I just think that like those character conflicts they had were just, I think I even gave it a B by the end. So I still like think I did like this, like for that middle. It's so goddamn good. Like, it's just so good. And I think that they left it off a little bit towards the end. Great Ezra casting, by the way. My God, like really good shit. And so in general, it's still a solid TV show. I think there were people that were like burn Star Wars to the ground after that finale. I'm like, you guys got to chill a little bit. Okay. I get it. She wasn't supposed to be able to know how to force push, whatever. Cool. Like move on. there's things that people just do off the back of their heads right away. Like that's just how Star Wars works. But in general, I did like it, but
it goes back to what we were talking about with other things here. With the horror franchises, with how people will be with, you know, the like fresh reboots of old properties, is that people get stuck in, that's not how I know it. It's probably funny because I'm thinking about this with like my father. I remember when Smallville was very big and I was very big into Smallville, that there's like, you know, it's an episodic television show that ran for 10 years, right? So there's some really ridiculous episodes. There's one literally about vampires in a sorority house. In like season 3, and I can't remember like why that was happening or whatever, but my dad was like, fucking vampires, and like every little thing he's like, that's not how it was, how it happened in the comics. That's not, well, number one, there's 80,000 comic runs of the same story that changed something here and there. There's different interpretations of shit. What?
I just want in this world someone that's your dad's age, like sitting in front of the TV. That's not how the comics went. I just, I love that imagery right there.
He used to say it all the time with Smallville. That's not how that happened. I'm like, it's different. It's a different interpretation. It's a different telling of the story, but they're staying true to the core beliefs. Like, I don't give a fuck if she force pushed or not, or should have known how to force push or not.
Rey hypnotizes a soldier in her, like, her stormtrooper in her first outing in her first adventure, and is able to grab a lightsaber with the force. Like, we're doing, like, this is going back to where the creator, where I was like nitpicky with plot points, but they were so bad that I couldn't ignore them. This is when the plot points are nitpicky. This is where it's like, I don't know, man. She was trained to use the force. She definitely used it a little bit better than you probably could. But who gives a shit? Like, those were the things that did not get to me as much as, honestly, it was just the conflict resolution of, hey, you massively fucked up. But you know what? My boy Anakin over there.
That makes sense. I do get that. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to a season two. Like, I think, and I like that, like, Star Wars fans were kind of like when The Mandalorian first came out, Star Wars fans were kind of like uniting again, where we weren't fighting as much as we always fucking do. And so finally they were just like, hey, we all like a thing. And I think that's what happened with Ahsoka, even if it pooped in the end. But
this is the type of thing I want to see more from Star Wars. I want to see more of this. Like, and I think it goes back, and I'm on the train of Dave Filoni taking over because he has a good grasp on this. And the other thing that we need to realize is that, like, there is never, and we've gotten away from this with film and television so much, there is never going to be a TV show or a movie that pleases 100% of the audience.
Especially when it's an IP movie and fan. I mean, you look at that
from
stuff
50 like, some years ago.
The new Star Treks are violently hated by Star Trek fans.
I love the new Star Treks.
I do too. But like, Star Trek fans fucking despise them. And so you're just not going to be able to please everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's okay. And as long as we have someone that understands the IP, and Dave Filoni has demonstrated that he understands the IP, much in the way I would say Kevin Feige demonstrates that he understands the IP. Yeah. I just think that at some point, on Feige's side of things, like, you have to shift the way that you do things. And maybe the TV news that's coming out with how they're going to approach that moving forward is a sign of them doing that. But you know, if you can't reinvent sort of your approach to how you do things, and you're going to keep getting the same inadequate results, then maybe it's time to step aside. Kathleen Kennedy at Star Wars Lucasfilm. How is she still employed?
She's got photos of like Walt Disney's head or something that she's just like ready to publicize to the world, or I don't know what. But
I just don't fucking get it. I don't get it.
Well, you've just like misfired on so many different film opportunities, and like, it's just it is strange. It's very strange. I think it's a very solid personal relationship, and it's just kind of dumb that it's not. It's like they're not making it a business relationship.
Yeah,
but
same. All right, Sean. Well,
this was good. You know what? This was what we had to do, freestyle, because if we did it structured, this would be a 5-hour episode. So
yeah,
because so we have to like make
a little bit of background. Yeah, a little bit of the background for people listening is that Sean and I were like, oh, we've been away for a little while. Do we want to just kind of like freestyle it and see how things go and catch up on like the stuff that we've been thinking about? And I think it worked out well. Maybe this will be part of a new approach.
Considering the majority of my life is going to be freestyle in about a month. This might be how these go.
What's the due date again?
November 30th, but we got ourselves a big ass baby in there, so that sucker's coming out early. Yeah, so it's gonna be, I keep on just thinking mid-November. We're like really pushing. It's like, you know, hey, if we could have like, you know, a day where we just drive to the hospital calmly, like we have an appointment to make in that day and stuff, like, you know, that would just be just dynamite.
Oh my gosh. Coming quick, but you guys will be good.
We'll be good.
You're sweating, Sean. You're sweating.
It is terrifying. It is. I feel so bad because it's like it's the Owen Wilson in Armageddon where it's like, yeah, I think I'm 10% excited and 90% nervous, or I'm 90% excited and 10% nervous. It's like, I don't know what I am at this point, but ugh.
Man, Owen Wilson was in Armageddon?
Fuck you.
No, I'm actually, I completely blocked that out of my mind.
So this is fun because I also it's kind of like it's a fun thing to do. It's a very Berenstain Bears Mandela effect kind of thing, because this was like early Owen Wilson. Like, you know, this was Meet the Parents was sort of, even Meet the Parents was like, people are like, oh my God, yeah, that's Owen Wilson. Like, people didn't really like fully catch on to him. And So he was, he blended a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely blended.
Oh, here we go.
How you doing, Oscar?
Great. I've got that excited, scared feeling. Like 98% excited, 2% scared.
I totally forgot about that.
It is, like, well, because, I mean, you know, spoiler alert for Armageddon, he dies in that first crash. So he's out cold in the beginning. That's why we remember Affleck and Willis and Buscemi and even, God bless him, Will Patton, baby. That dude's just going strong.
My God.
Coach Yost.
What a wild thing to forget.
1998, we could do an Armageddon anniversary rewatch. It's the 25th anniversary is coming up. I fucking love that movie.
I don't want to fall asleep. what a rockin'.
What a time, buddy. Good to see you again. Good to see you again.
You too. You too. Guys, we'll be back next week, God willing. Maybe we should, we get this from people like, don't get political and shit. We're not getting political, but just to say, like, you know, anyone that's out there affected by what's happening overseas in Israel and Palestine, Israel and Gaza at this point, terrorism in any form is fucking horrendous. And what's happening is fucking horrendous and going to destroy and end too many lives. So, we're thinking about all of those people that are affected and those, even our friends that are impacted.
We know a lot of people on this Instagram film community that have been affected, and it's just horrifying. Please stay informed. I've posted like the places to go to stay informed in this stuff. Pod Save the World, we were talking about off mic blah, blah, blah. The crooked media is a liberal bias and they admit that they do, but also like for Pod Save the World, they don't have a liberal bias because
you get the history.
Yeah, you're talking about world events. And so it's so important to look at that. And just in general, like, just please stay on the news with this stuff. Social media has been like fucking horrid with this kind of
absolutely
stuff. So
horrendous.
Please try to stay closer to news websites than any sort of social media websites. And but please, anyone out there affected, our hearts are with you. Without doubt.
On that note, I'm going to watch Goosebumps.
Yeah, buddy.
Bye.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.